Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols alongside NBA champ and the co-host of the All the Smoke podcast, Matt Barnes, as well as award-winning writer, author, Jackie McMullen, Hall of Famer. Always so good to have you here. And guys, we are entering day five of NBA free agency. While we're still waiting on Kawhi Leonard to officially decide his future, we now have his teammate, Reggie Jackson, returning officially to the Clippers. It's a two-year, $22 million deal. Jackson scored nearly 18 a game during LA's first ever run to the conference finals while he was playing on that minimum deal. And he's just one of many moves this week, many of which surrounded point guards, from Kyle Lowry to Miami, Lonzo to the Bulls, Kemba to the Knicks. Even CP3 got $120 million to stay in Phoenix. In fact, just this week, players agreed to approximately $2.8 billion in new deals. $2.8 billion. Matt, as you look at everything that's happened thus far, who is your biggest winner in free agency? Besides whoever's on the other end of that check.
Right, the players who got the money, first and foremost. But it's still really early. We're 5 days in. But, you know, off the rip, I think the Lakers, Bulls, and Heat all did a great job. All addressed issues. We talked last week, and I want to say the Lakers only had three guys under contract, right, and now they have a full team. And if this was 10 years ago, we'd be arguing this is the greatest team ever assembled. Yes. So I love what the Lakers have done. I love what Miami's done addressing their needs and being able to re-sign Victor Oladipo. And then I like what Chicago did. So those are my winners.
So Matt, I'm gonna focus on the Miami Heat as the winner for me. The sweepstakes, if you want to call them that, in free agency, it all revolved around Kyle Lowry. They not only landed Kyle Lowry, they poached PJ Tucker. Mm-hmm. And I'm always happy if it's my team, if I have a Morris on it. In this case, they got a Markeith. And I just think when you look at this roster, there's a lot of toughness, a lot of veteran presence. And you mentioned Oladipo, and I'm with you on this. If I were the Heat and I'm looking at Victor Oladipo, I'm thinking, you know, I'd like to have him back, but I don't want to spend a lot of money on him. And guess what? They didn't have to.
Yep. Absolutely. I mean, he is still working his way back from yet another injury. I like your Morris point, Jackie. I'm wondering sometimes if there's like a third secret Morris triplet out there so that more teams could have a little Morris in their life. We haven't identified.
There's some Barnes twins on the way as well.
Yes, there are, and they're shooters too. Yes. All right, let's flip to the other side. Jackie, which team's offseason concerned you the most?
I didn't really love, Rachel, what the New Orleans Pelicans did, and I think that's in part because I'm a big Lonzo Ball fan, and I really feel that all that Lonzo needed was a chance to be in one place and to start building the team that included him. He's not a guy that needs the ball a lot. They moved on from Lonzo Ball, and I understand what they were trying to do. They were swinging for the fences. They were trying to get Chris Paul. They were trying to get Kyle Lowry. They got neither. They ended up giving up two first-round picks in all their transactions. They come back with Devonte Graham. I like Devonte Graham, but you lose Lonzo Ball. Have you surrounded young Zion Williamson with a team that is immeasurably better by these moves? I think not. And it still cost you two first-round draft picks.
I would agree, Jackie. I really feel like they didn't do anything thus far. Again, it's still, 5 days early. And I think sometimes these middle market or small market teams have to be more realistic on swinging for the fences. You know what I mean? Like, you have to let someone like Lonzo go, you have to know you have to have something coming back, and they didn't. Agreed. I like Devonte Graham, young player, continuing to get better. But to lose a Lonzo Ball, that's a tough pill to swallow. But at the same time, it's hard for me to say what team has really lost, because there's guys still like Damian Lillard, Ben Simmons, and Bradley Beal who can possibly still be moving. I think Ben Simmons is probably the most likely out of those three to move. But, who's to say with this wild NBA, summertime, who's really going to move? So I still think there's chances for teams to improve. But I would agree that Pelicans haven't done much this offseason.
This is the NBA. You could wake up any morning and something crazy could have happened. So that absolutely is a possibility.
That's the truth.
Jackie, I'm in your camp. I thought Lonzo Ball's fit with the Pelicans and with Zion in particular was actually really nice. I thought they had some nice alley-oop chemistry, just some nice chemistry overall, and their games fit each other. So I was frankly confused when they didn't extend him last summer and then seemed to be shopping him through much of this season. And Jackie, you've seen a lot of different free agencies over the years. I'm kind of curious for your perspective. The league has certainly been more serious in recent years on cracking down on tampering. Do you think that is why we saw teams like New Orleans kind of clear this space without even knowing if they really had a hope at Kyle Lowry or Chris Paul? Because it doesn't feel like they really had a real shot at either of them.
I'd like to be optimistic and say there was no tampering. Sorry, Adam. Sorry, everybody in the NBA. But boy, these deals were announced pretty quickly. You can't stop people from talking in the back channels in advance of these moments, whether it's players and players, agents and players, whatever you want to say. I'm sure everybody tries to follow the rules, but I'm sorry, I'm not buying it. I still don't believe they do.
I'm not the hugest fan of tampering rules either, as we have discussed plenty of times on the show, so kind of think that stuff's inevitable. I do want to get to some of the rookie max extensions. So these are no longer rookies, but these are guys who are on their rookie deals. They are soon to be fourth-year players, and they have already signed Trae Young, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, both agreeing to five-year deals worth at least $172 million and up to $207 million if they make All-NBA this season. Luka also likely will receive his new deal after the Olympics, according to reports. Mark Cuban is just going to say, here is all the money. You can have all of it. It is worth noting that if you just want to do some comparisons, if you look back at the 2017 class, Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum, they each signed five-year max with player options in the last year of their deals. So that's sort of the most sweetheart deal a franchise can offer. Bam Adebayo, De'Aaron Fox, they did the full 5 years, no player option. Trae and Shai, obviously the same. Trae also has an early termination option in his new deal, while Shai is the full five. Now, Matt, besides Luka, do you see any other member of that 2018 draft class getting the max deal, whether it comes with that player option or not?
I think DeAndre Ayton has proved his worth, and he owes a lot of that to Chris Paul and Coach Williams that kind of found him a great spot. And again, Chris has had a great track record of making bigs do what they do, reaching their full potential. So I was really impressed, especially starting in the playoffs with that first matchup against AD, although he was a little hampered. Ayton came with it. And then one more person who could possibly get the max, but if not, he's going to get a lot of money, is Michael Porter Jr. I still think he's been a little up and down, but he showed flashes of his upside that really has a lot of people in Denver excited. So those are the two guys for me.
I think, Matt, you're right on it. If there are two guys that may get it, but I would argue that I don't think either one of them will get to that point. Mm-hmm. If a team wanted to give the rookie max extension, they would have already done it, right?
You're right.
That means that there's negotiations going on here. Michael Porter Jr., I think, has a chance to be a star.
Agreed.
But remember, the Nuggets are still a small market team. They've already maxed out Jokic and Jamal Murray. I think they want Michael Porter Jr. badly. It's just at what price, and I imagine that they'll come to some agreement, and he'll get a very lucrative extension, just not the max. With Ayton, I love his projection, and I love his progression as well. But remember, he's still a big, and in today's NBA, are you going to put a rookie max price tag on a big? I'm not convinced the Suns will do that.
It's so complicated, too, with Denver. Just to go back to Michael Porter Jr., they were just set up so perfectly going into these playoffs, the idea that they had all their guys turning at the right times. They had made all the right decisions in the draft. They had made all the right decisions in trade, bringing in Aaron Gordon at the deadline. And then, of course, an MVP in Nikola Jokic. And then Jamal Murray goes down. And it's just a good reminder as we talk about these extensions. When a player like that goes down, it just doesn't affect, they didn't advance as far in the playoffs as we expected. It means the timelines on all these deals are now off. The front office had envisioned, right, Michael Porter Jr. kind of signing with a full team that maybe had done something. Now most of this season, Jamal Murray is going to be recovering from injury. So there's so many other questions that come into this, and those injuries reverberate even right now at contract time.
He may not like this story. In 98, we're playing the Utah Jazz. The first quarter ends. Luke has 12 points, 4 blocks, and 4 rebounds. And I go to Luke, I say, that's how you play, man. You do that, we dominate. We up by 16 at the end of the game. Luke had 12 points, 4 rebounds, and 4 blocks. We're winning by 16, we lose by 15. And I just looked at Luke and I said, you know what, Luke? That is the last time I'm going to give you a compliment in the middle of the game.
Oh, Jackie, that's the Michael Jordan we know so well.
We need more MJ stories, man. We need more MJ stories.
I love this from the Australian Broadcast Company. And, you know, very fitting this time of year. Team USA and the Australia just went at it in both the men's and women's bracket in the Olympics. It worked. It all worked out for MJ and Luke. That's all I'm going to say.
Mike didn't care if you loved you. He just wanted you to win with him.
and welcome back to our studio here in Los Angeles. I'm here with Matt Barnes, Jackie McMullen, and I want to turn our attention to your neck of the woods, Jackie, out in Boston. Brad Stevens' first season in the front office. A lot of the stuff he did happened before free agency. The Celtics got out from under Kemba Walker's deal. They brought Al Horford back. They've added some other pieces, Josh Richardson, Chris Dunn, and his Cantor back on a one-year deal. So, Jackie, are you buying the Celtics' moves this offseason and Brad the GM?
Well, I think the problem the Celtics had was the GM that traded for Evan Fournier was no longer here to be the GM that was going to sign Evan Fournier to a free agent contract. And I think what Brad Stevens did was he looked at the price tag that the Knicks were getting Fournier up to and said, you know what, we don't want to go deep into the luxury tax and we're going to pass on that. I think that was unfortunate for the Celtics in that I thought Fournier was a terrific fit there as a catch and shoot 3-point shooter, something that I think they really could have used. But I think they're taking the long view, like many teams are, and focusing on that 22-23 free agency class. They have hardly anybody under contract except for their, you know, their two studs, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Their next bit of business is to get an extension with Robert Williams III. I expect them to do that. I also think they're a little thin at the point guard. I will be curious to see. I don't know if they have interest in Dennis Schroeder, who's still out there. I think it would probably depend on the price, but that might not be the worst move for them to make if they can get him at a bargain price and get some backup point guard help for Marcus Smart, who's now your starting point guard with Kemba gone.
Yeah, I just saw actually on the way in, I saw they were talking to Dennis Schroeder, and to me, that's, although he's a very solid player, that's an iffy pickup for me from a standpoint of you just proved your previous two star point guards were scoring point guards that it didn't fit with your core stars. So to me, I think they really still need a distributing point guard who can knock down shots and play defense. So although I like Dennis Schroeder, I don't know if he's a great fit for Boston per se. They picked up small pieces, and I agree with Jackie. I think first and foremost, I think Coach Udoka has to get this team to buy in because they're still a very talented team. And I think, you know, from what I heard, that Brad Stevens kind of lost the locker room last year, but this team is still very talented. So you get, you know, you get bits and pieces here and there. Richardson adds depth. You know, hopefully Dunn can return to his Chicago form. Cantor's a monster on the glass and in good depth. Horford's leadership. So they're gonna stay set for now. But I do agree. I really feel like they need a point guard still to give them some more depth, and then, you know, look forward to next year's free agency class.
It's interesting at this point in free agency because you're probably not gonna get exactly what you want right this late. So Dennis Schroeder might not be the best fit, but he is available. And Boston might not be where Dennis Schroeder imagined him being himself being, but maybe Boston is one of the few places with room for him that's available right now. So your expectations maybe change as free agency progresses. We will be watching that. I do want to look at the East as a whole, though, guys, because we know they have the title favorites in the Nets. They also have the reigning champs, the Milwaukee Bucks. Trae Young broke out in the playoffs. The Heat, as we talked about at the top, huge moves in free agency. So take a look at the head-to-head records between the conferences last season. The East slightly behind the West, 208 to 242, if we count all the games. And if we go over the last 10 seasons, it's a 5-5 tie when you look at just the titles, which conference has been the champion. So, Matt, do you think that the East has caught up to the West and that this season we'll see that flip more in the other direction, or are you still west?
I mean, I think they're pretty neck and neck. Obviously, with the title, like everything you just mentioned, they have the Nets are all odds on to favor. You're returning Milwaukee. The Heat got a lot better. Chicago got better. You know, Philly's always going to be in the mix. You know, the West is a little, I wouldn't even say top heavy. The West is, I just think it's going to be a good year of basketball, to be honest with you, Rachel. I think it's pretty fairly matched, and it's going to be fun to watch this season.
Yeah, West is deep.
Right, and so much wide open the league is than I can remember in many years, and we've seen that, I feel, the last two seasons. And I will say this about the West. If you look at their top teams, some of their major players, except for the Lakers, are coming off injuries. You know, Kawhi Leonard isn't going to play a good portion of the season for the Clippers. Jamal Murray, you don't know exactly when he comes back for Denver. You'd like to think that Donovan Mitchell will be fully healthy coming back for the Jazz, but we know that he came back probably a little earlier than he should have to play in the postseason for them. So for those reasons, I do give the nod to the East. You've got the defending champs. The Brooklyn Nets, we've all been waiting to see, and hopefully we will get to see that team completely healthy. And the Sixers, I'm telling you, We don't know what's going to happen with Ben Simmons, what they might add to that team. I mean, you know Daryl's going to do something.
Yes.
So I'm favoring the East at this time.
That is, yeah. Look, Daryl Morey always has something up his sleeve. There is no doubt about that. And you have to remember the injuries we're talking about, the ones you just mentioned, Jackie, those are the injuries we know about.
Right.
There's always going to be, unfortunately, one or two major injuries to
That's
a
right.
major star on a team this coming year. So it is hard to predict, but it is interesting to see the way the East is really filling out. And there are so many contenders. And I will just say that for all the people who during dynasty periods, and we always have some, right? So during the Warriors dynasty or the Bulls dynasty, or wherever you are, if you said, oh, this is boring, I feel like I already know who's going to win the title, this is your season. Last season, this season, these are your seasons, people. So
right.
enjoy. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, still with NBA champ Matt Barnes, Hall of Famer Jackie McMullen. We wanted to take a deeper dive, guys, into the new-look Lakers with that fabulous game we call Jump Ball Lakers Edition. All right, first, who will average more assists next season, Russ or LeBron? In each of the last four seasons, just a little background here, either Russ or LeBron have led the NBA in assists, but now they're teammates, Matt. So who's going to get it this next year?
I think it'll be LeBron only because he needs these younger guys who are younger than him to kind of carry the load throughout the season. You know, this is going to be a marathon for this team. I think they know it. Although most guys defer to LeBron, I see LeBron leading this team in assists because he's going to need these guys throughout the regular season.
All right, I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to go Russ. You know, one thing we know about Russ, when he gets into the paint, he is good in anybody in the league as distributing the ball okay. once he gets in there. Imagine how many times he's going to be in the paint and conditioned to Anthony Davis for a jam. I'm taking Russ. I think Russ wants to fit in, wants to make this work, and there's no better way to do that than to distribute dimes all over the floor.
Yeah, and he's talked about wanting to leave the impression that he's a good teammate here and the idea that he's giving assists, dishing to his teammates, passing. I think that will be a big focus of his in the first month or two, just to establish himself with these Lakers. So I'm tipping into Jackie's side, of the fence. Next, I want to ask you guys about crunch time minutes. Do you think that the Lakers vets or their youth will end up being used more in crunch time? Because the Lakers did, of course, add several veterans. You've seen all the headlines and ages and graphs and charts. Carmelo Anthony, Dwight Howard, Trevor Ariza. But they did also add some youth guys. The backcourt, Kendrick Nunn, Malik Monk was just a huge, huge steal for them. They re-signed Talen Horton Tucker, who, of course, they've invested a ton in over the years. So, Matt, when we get to the end of games, particularly in the playoffs, who do you think will get the bulk of the minutes, the older vets or the future?
It's going to be depending on injury and then how the younger players play throughout the season. I mean, you know, as an older player, you understand it's not really about who starts the game. It's about mm-hmm. who finishes the game. That's who the coach trusts the most. So, I mean, that's going to depend on a lot of injuries and then the development of these younger guys, which I think the younger guys are going to be called upon a lot this year because this team is a little older. Again, if this is the team they had 10 years ago, we'd be talking about this as one of the greatest teams ever put together. But this team is a little bit older. I'm not holding that against them. I just think it's going to take their youth is going to get a good run and a great experience during the regular season. And hopefully that'll bode well for them in the playoffs.
Well, so here's the question. If the youth gets that good run, can they be consistent? Because you know how it is with LeBron. When it gets down to crunch time, he needs to look over at you and say, I believe in you and I trust you.
Mm-hmm.
And my instinct tells me that it's going to be the vets to start. Now, maybe a guy like Malik Monk, whose three-point shooting went up to 40% this past season, you know, really got a hot hand with Charlotte. If he can prove to you can do that to LeBron, LeBron's going to tell Frank Vogel, I want him in the game.
Right.
But I think in the early going, at least, it's gonna start out being those vets.
Yep.
All right, one last one. You guys talked about Brooklyn being the favorite over in the Eastern Conference in the last segment. So let's take it a step further. More likely to make the NBA Finals, the Lakers or the Nets, because they're the favorites in their respective conferences, according to Caesars Sportsbook. But those conferences are very different paths to an NBA Finals. So, Jackie, for you, which team would be more likely to make it to the championship round?
So my instincts tells me I want to say the Lakers because I think they'll have an easier path to the NBA Finals in out of the West than the Nets would in the East. But I just got to say this. The Nets, completely healthy, are one of the most talented teams I think we will ever, ever see. So I guess I'm not going away from Brooklyn.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like this question. These are my two that I picked to be in the finals, but I agree with you, Jackie. You know, they're one long toenail away from going to the finals, right, and possibly winning the finals with just KD healthy.
Right.
This team, you know, we're talking about there's no dynasty. This team can be the next dynasty if they're able to stay healthy. Although I think, you know, losing someone like Jeff Green doesn't sound like a big deal, but he was an integral part of that team. So hopefully they can find someone who replaces his energy and what he brought to the team. But I think this team is going to have a chip on their shoulder this year after what happened last year with injuries and all this chitter chatter about what's going on. So I'm picking the Nets as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, that toenail, right, that Kevin Durant foot in the second round, that will be remembered for a long time. It's interesting, though, Jackie, that even part of your logic was the Lakers might have an easier path. That kind of answers the question from the previous segment about how strong the East is
exactly
this year versus the West, because we just wouldn't have said easier path in the West in previous recent seasons.
Right.
All right, Jackie, we're going to give you a segment off. Don't go too far, though. You'll be back later in the show. And coming up, Bobby Marks is going to join us to do a little capology and look ahead to the biggest storylines remaining this offseason. Will Dame, Beal, Simmons be moved? Bobby's got all the answers always, so I'm very thrilled to welcome him in. Zach LaVine has been enjoying his gold medal run with Team USA, winning the last four games en route to the gold medal game. But check this out, Matt. Four-game winning streak that they are on.
Sad.
This is the longest of Zach LaVine's professional career.
Sad.
All 411 NBA games since leaving UCLA without winning four in a row.
Unbelievable.
Matt, how is it even possible?
That's tough, man. Just being in bad situations. I think the last time he won more than four in a row was when he was a Bruin right down the street. You know, they've reloaded this team. Hopefully they can give him the extension he deserves and he's earned. And I think they'll definitely win more than four this year with the roster they put together.
Your first ever pro four-game winning streak. You got to go to Tokyo for that.
Right.
Maybe not with all the changes the Bulls have made, right? Maybe you'll get one this year back here in the NBA. Welcome in, ESPN front office insider and cap savant Bobby Marks to the show. Bobby, welcome. And you brought us some breaking news, please. Before we move on, talk to us about Kawhi and the Clippers.
Rachel, Kawhi Leonard drama part two is now over. We do not have to worry about Kawhi Leonard not going back to the Clippers. I talked to multiple people close to the organization today, and they gave me a 100% guarantee that Leonard will be in a Clipper uniform, well, at least rehabbing in a Clipper uniform next year. And I think the big thing now is just kind of working out what the contract's going to be, if it's going to be one of those two-year contracts where Leonard can become a free agent again next offseason to sign that $240+ million contract, or if it's going to be a four-year, $175 million contract. But they told me that they've been in contact with Leonard throughout this whole process, that there was never a doubt that he was not coming back. And I think Rachel, we saw the market kind of dictate that when teams like New York went out and used cap space, when the Heat went out and got Kyle Lowry, that it's a little bit different than 2019 when free agency was totally frozen.
Yeah, I mean, look, the fact that we didn't have the helicopter chasing a car and an SUV and the fans waiting outside of a hotel in case the meeting was there kind of speaks to the fact that most people thought this was a done deal, which is why most other teams spent that cap room. But then, of course, as the days dragged on, I know there are Clippers fans who have been a little bit nervous here. And 100% assurance, Bobby, that is some serious news. So we really appreciate that. I had to, though, bring back this flow chart that you wrote and posted at the beginning of free agency. We put it on the show that day.
Impressive.
You just did this like in a conference room for yourself, right?
Oh, yeah. I was actually locked in a conference room by myself. There was nobody. There were windows there. And that was, we hadn't even gotten to free agency yet. So you imagine what I can do right now with about 4 hours sleep. So, yeah. And that was basically, we showed how Kyle Lowry dictated free agency. And it all lined up as far as Kyle's move to Miami and how all the other pieces kind of fell in place.
Well, from that flow chart, the other storylines that flow are, we're talking about, right, some of the biggest storylines between the season begins. You have got the Dame Lillard situation going on in Portland because, you know, he's got a fourth album coming out. Should we talk about that, Matt?
Absolutely.
Okay. Or maybe we'll talk about which team he's going to play for next year. He has stressed multiple times he has not publicly requested a trade to the Blazers, who, of course, themselves have stayed pretty quiet during free agency. And Dame did give his thoughts, though, on Portland's move so far. Take a listen.
You know, he wasn't able to go out there and just get you know, some of the guys that we would have liked. And, you know, you go down the list and you go through the guys that you like that are out there that haven't committed to another team or that was a part of your plans in free agency. And you get the ones that, you know, that want to be a part of what you're doing. And I think that's what we did.
All right. So hearing that, Bobby, what should we look for next with Dame's future in Portland?
Yeah, I think this is going to play out a little bit, Rachel. I think Lillard will go to training camp. I expect them to be in a Trailblazer uniform. And this is something that will, when we get to December or January, based on where this Portland team is, and he looks at the pieces that are around him. I mean, they brought Norman Powell back, but then it was all bargain shopping. Cody Zeller, Ben McLemore, Tony Snell. That's kind of your bench for the veteran minimum. And they don't have much out there except for maybe flipping CJ McCollum. So I think this plays out. And the season will basically dictate as far as what Lillard's future is going to be here in Portland.
Matt, it's an interesting position for him as a player because one of the sort of backbones of his tenure in Portland has been how loyal he has been to the franchise, how he's talked about not wanting to just run off and join a super team. But if the front office isn't doing what you think they need to do, does that put you in a rock and a hard place? Because Bobby's talking about maybe asking for a trade midseason, and that just doesn't seem like it's in Dame Lillard's character.
I think Dame is doing everything he's supposed to do as a player and a leader of that organization and sticking to the script. But I think without being said, this management and front office has a lot of pressure on them. They haven't really done anything significant to make this team a real contender yet in the offseason. Like you said, they can still play with the CJ McCollum and see what they could possibly get with him. But it'll be interesting to see. I mean, loyalty is great, and we all want that loyalty. But at the end of the day, are you going to continue to waste? I wouldn't say waste because they've had some good runs. Yeah. But are you continue to spend your prime years in a situation where you know you're not going to be able to win a championship? So we'll have to see how this continues to play out. And it'll be interesting to see if you know, come January that they're in the middle of the pack or towards the bottom, you know, of the playoff seating if he does ask for a trade.
Well, speaking of a guy who so far has hitched his wagon to a franchise that is probably not contending for the top of this conference, let's go over to the East and talk about Bradley Beal. Could have requested a trade before the draft, chose not to. The Wizards instead traded Russell Westbrook, of course, to the Lakers on draft night. The ensuing five-team deal, Bobby, you're going to need a new flow chart just for this deal, ultimately led to a whole collection of players moving. Spencer Dinwiddie, Kyle Kuzma, KCP, who we should note, he is a good friend of Bradley Beal. So that's an important relationship there. Montrezl Harrell, Aaron Holiday, and more. So, Bobby, Brad does have that extension decision coming up. What does he have to decide next in Washington and when?
Yeah, he still has a little bit of time. That extension would not start until October 1st as far as for him to make a decision. But it's interesting, Rachel. After the season, Tommy Shepard, their general manager, just said that this roster is not good enough, and there's going to be a lot of different faces. And he basically took Russell Westbrook into, as you mentioned, Spencer Dinwiddie and, you know, the three from the Lakers, certainly Aaron Holiday. And I think I would trust Tommy. He went out and got Daniel Gafford at the trade deadline. So it shows that they can try to add talent around Bradley. So I think this is another situation that basically plays out itself. And we'll see where this Wizards team is, you know, midseason. They're not up there where, you know, Brooklyn and, of course, Miami, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, some of those other teams. But it is hard to go from kind of that 5-8 seed to jump into that top three.
I like what they've done this offseason. To me, it was a little bit more of a sense of urgency, you know, counter to what Portland did, which was, you know, grab a few bench pieces. They've added some solid pieces to this team. And although it's top heavy in the East, I see this team anywhere from 5-8. You know what I mean? They added a lot of depth. Aaron Holiday is someone solid who's kind of being looked over. I know Montrez is ready to have a big season. I know Kuz is better to have a big season. They've added some other pieces. So I like what they've done. Again, I agree with you guys. I don't think they're going to be contending for a title, but they'll definitely be in the mix of that, you know, middle to lower half of the Eastern Conference playoff seating.
Well, look, if you could make it into the playoffs, not just the play-in, and if you can even win one series, that will be considered a win in Washington, D.C. Not every team's goals are exactly the same every season. I do want to go up I-95 to Philadelphia because the future of Ben Simmons still up in the air. The three-time All-Star does have four more years left on his contract, so that's always important to remember. The Sixers have some time. Except also, reports are swirling of how much, if any, interaction the two parties have had this summer. It really sounds like most is just being directed through Ben's agent, Rich Paul. So, Bobby, what should we be looking for with Simmons in this situation?
Yeah, I mean, he's another guy. I think we're going to see Ben Simmons in a Sixer uniform when training camp goes, unless the asking price from Daryl Morey, their president, kind of gets a little bit lower here. He's not for everyone, right? He's not for all 29 teams. I think you have to have a certain role, certainly all NBA from a defensive standpoint, but he's different than what James Harden went through a year ago, where you could line up 29 teams and 29 teams would want James Harden on their roster, where Simmons, you know, has to fit a certain role here. And if the asking price gets lower, then yeah, maybe we could see him moved. But when you have a player with 4 years, $147 million left on your contract, you're just not looking to kind of give him away.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit it on the head. They've been asking for a king's ransom. So I think their requests for what they're going to get in exchange will have to come down for him to move. But this is going to be interesting, because I don't know how true the reports are, but if there has been no communication with teammates or management, I said last week, and I don't know if the rest of the panel agreed with me, I think what has been said has already kind of the writing's on the wall. I don't really know if you can get him back there with the right mindset with the rest of his teammates to really make something of it. But again, he's locked in for 4 more years, so we're going to have to see. But I think if they are going to trade him, I think you made a great point. They're going to have to, you know, be more reasonable with their what they're going to get in return.
It's such a tough question, this one, because yes, some of the toothpaste has left the tube, as Zach Lowe has said about this situation, and we've seen some edginess and hurt feelings. And you want to go into a season like this with your team being your team, and guys feeling like the guys in training camp are the guys they're going to go to battle with. And we've been talking all show about how deep the Eastern Conference is this coming season. All that being said, Ben Simmons' value is significantly lower now after a poor playoff performance, and when everybody in the league knows the Sixers are looking to deal him, than it will be as we get closer to the trade deadline. If you look at the track record of Ben Simmons' regular seasons, he will be playing pretty well, probably barring an injury, by the time we get there, and that's when his value could be higher. So Daryl Morey in the front office has to really figure out, do they want to weigh sort of team chemistry as more important, or what they could get back for Ben Simmons is more important? And since we don't know the team chemistry quite specifically, only they can offer that. But we'll find out, Bobby, right? We'll be watching.
We will. As they say, the honeymoon, you're usually in a honeymoon period in the offseason, but I think for Philadelphia and Portland, we're not in a honeymoon period here, as far as what your roster looks like.
Well, we hope you're in a sleeping period at some point soon. Maybe over the weekend you can expand out to 4.5 or 5 hours of sleep a night, Bobby. We'll see.
Hey, trust me. I've got no whiteboards in my house, so the whiteboards are safe.
All right. We will look for your next flow chart, though, sometime this offseason. We'll work on a new one. Thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate
it. Thanks, Rachel.
All right, it's crunch time here on The Jump. Yes, Andre Iguodala heading back to the Warriors on a one-year deal. He previously played, of course, there 6 seasons, 3 championships, a finals MVP with Golden State. Matt, a teammate of yours, what do you think this homecoming for Iguodala is going to be like?
Not surprised, and his family never left. They've been in the Bay. They never left the Bay. I saw Iggy a couple months ago at our kids' AU tournament, so great move for the organization. Obviously a little bit older, but his leadership, his understanding how to play. People underestimate his just the IQ that this team had when they were making their dynasty run.
Yep.
Worst kept secret in the league. You know, everybody could have taken this one to the bank. And I think it's because he commands so much respect, not just with his teammates, but also with that coaching staff and that front office. He tells it like it is. He doesn't care who it bothers. It generates dialogue and accountability on that team.
Yeah.
Great place for him to be.
And of course, after a tough year in a lot of places for Steph Curry, didn't have Klay Thompson again, had a very up and down season, obviously great at the end, but you know, to have another old friend, adult on the team, someone that he and Klay and Draymond are so close to.
Golf buddy.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's going to make a difference too, just in morale, and that stuff's important in a long season. Kelly Oubre, on the other hand, not returning to the Golden State Warriors. He is on the way to Charlotte to play with LaMelo and the Hornets on a 2-year deal worth about $25 million. Now, Jackie, I know his agent was out there hoping for maybe a sign and trade as a way to get him more money, but he just went to Charlotte outright. Do you like the fit there?
I do. I'm a little surprised this is where he ended up. I really thought the Spurs might make a move for him, but of course they ended up signing Doug McDermott. Mm-hmm. And the Charlotte was the team that had the money that could fit Kelly Oubre at the salary that he was hoping to get. I think Kelly was a little bit of a casualty of a free agent class that had a lot of scores, a lot of players, and he probably didn't get what he hoped he would get from the outset, much like a guy like Dennis Schroeder, who we've already talked about.
really talented guy. I think he'll be a great fit there. This is a young, he's going to go with this young core, yeah. Him being young as well, someone who's a proven scorer, can play defense as well. I think it's a great pickup for Charlotte.
I love, too, the roll of video we were showing in the middle of there. Yes, we saw some basketball, but there was also his style walking into the building, him with some dancers,
right,
because
yeah.
Kelly Oubre does that kind of thing. And I do feel that you're right. He fits into that culture that they are building in Charlotte. It is such a young, fun, dynamic, yep. exciting team. I think he's only going to add to that. All right, guys, I want to switch over to what's going on in Tokyo. The U.S. women's team won their 54th consecutive Olympic game. I mean, can we just take a moment?
Insane.
That is insane. They held Serbia to 30%
awesome.
Shooting. They will now face Japan for what would be their 7th consecutive gold if they can get it done. Jackie, that dominance over time, to just never have that one lapse in concentration game where people are off their shot or something, how do you stay that dominant for that long?
Well, I think what's interesting about this team, Rachel, is in the past it's been, you'd start with Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi. They're yeah. just two of the greatest of all time, and they're on this team. But the team that's leading them to the gold medal this time around, it's people like Asia Wilson, Brittany Griner, Chelsea Gray, and Brianna Stewart. Newer, younger names,
yes.
and,
mm-hmm.
and I think that both Diane and Sue Bird 100% respect the idea that they're passing the torch. This is going to be unprecedented. They're going to get their 5th gold medal, because I do believe the U.S. women will win. But this is really, this team is really more about the younger players who are in their prime who are carrying this
yeah,
team.
I agree 100%. I think it's a passing of the torch. You still have your great vets there
yeah.
that have set the table for these younger players. But the youth and exuberance of these new younger players coming on this stage has been too much for the rest of the world to handle. So I definitely feel our women's game is in a good place moving forward.
And that's crazy, Jackie, what you just said. 5th Olympic gold medal. We see swimmers do that or gymnasts.
Right.
Where there's several events in one Olympic year they can win. To win 5 gold medals in a sport where they only give out one
right.
every 4 years,
right.
it's just, again, shout out to the U.S. women.
Math. Yeah, long time.
Dominance. All right, a little more breaking news for you because it's free agency week, so we got more. Woj reporting, Brooklyn Nets star Kevin Durant does indeed plan to sign that 4-year, $198 million extension that we have been talking about all week. He will become eligible on Saturday, and this is part of what will be more than $500 million, people. $580 million in contracts that the big three in Brooklyn are expected to sign. I mean, Jackie, that number alone is just crazy.
It's staggering, but I think we saw this when they brought on James Harden. They were serious about doing whatever it takes to get to the finish line. I'm actually really happy for Kevin Durant. I think it's a great place for him. It's a, you know, really a place to establish himself as the greatest Brooklyn Nets player perhaps that ever played. So I think this makes sense for him. I think he's done moving around.
Hats off to the Tsai family for
yeah.
coming in and really just reshaping that organization and doing what it has to do, even if that means going into the luxury tax to build an exciting team. And they're definitely going to reap the benefits from championships from here on out.
Yeah, I mean, woof. I think, you know you're giving that money once you make that trade, right? And every other team in the league would do the same if they could. But the fact that Brooklyn is able to, both in terms of having those bodies in the gym and then having an owner who can, in fact, put forth that much moolah, man, it's just a lot thinking about it. More than $500 million is going to be agreed to this offseason between just those big three in Brooklyn. All right, a little breaking news. Circle around if you're just joining us. Bobby Marks on this show confirmed that Kawhi Leonard will return to the Clippers. Terms still being discussed, but Jackie, how do the Clippers move forward with Kawhi back? And he's going to be rehabbing most, if not all, of this season.
Well, this was a marriage that, you know, you were talking before about off the record things that go on. I think this was always going to happen for Kawhi. I think he made it clear. He's home. The Clippers have made so many allowances to him in terms of his own personal training staff, you know, being able to go home to San Diego. And I always just, I'll say it again, $36 million is what he turned down with a torn ACL. It is good to be Kawhi Leonard. And you know what? He deserves it.
Agreed. I don't think this is a surprise to anyone. I kind of just think it was optics when he initially opted out to
right.
just kind of weigh the market, see what direction he wanted to go with his contract, whether it be a 1+1, 2-year, 4-year deal. But it's good to be Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, amen. By the way, Woj reporting Justice Winslow will join him in L.A. with the Clippers. Thanks to you guys. We'll see you on Monday.